You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, welcome in. Happy Tuesday to you. I'm here with Ethan Westerman in studio today. We're going to talk a lot of Arkansas basketball today. The Razorbacks getting ready for a big game tomorrow night against Texas at Bud Walton Arena. End of the show, we'll talk some Razorback baseball, Razorback softball. Both of those teams are in town this week. But we start with basketball. And the big news right now, Ethan, is the status of Adu Thero, who took himself out of the game last Saturday against Missouri with a little bit of a back injury, something that's been recurring with him for a couple of years. And you mentioned this to me. I'd forgotten that he had said this, and this being Thero, that, you know, he really went on a big growth spurt from the time that he was in high school until he got to Kentucky and even to now. He's grown about 3 inches, maybe a little bit more, in a very short amount of time. Maybe something that's affected his back, and it's something that he's dealt with for a few years now.
Yeah, and if you go back, and I think it's the first episode of the Calipari docuseries on Vice, they actually talk a little bit about how Calipari recruited Adu in the first place, knowing that, because he coached his dad, Adu's dad, and I've met Adu's dad. He's the tallest guy with the firmest handshake I think I've ever met. I mean, that was the handshake of the grip of death, of how firm that thing was. But he basically recruited Adu whenever he was, like, I think maybe sophomore year of high school, like 6'1 or something around there, knowing that this is a guy that's probably going to grow into his body as he goes. And yeah, I think that you just naturally, as you keep growing, start having some growing pains. It is interesting because what happened Saturday against Missouri, Calipari said his back was bothering him. Adu's had a history of back injuries, but we saw a little bit of a limp too. Like, we're taking just for his word that it was a back. I mean, that's what Calipari said, but there was a little bit of a limp that Thero had too.
Have you ever had back problems?
Yeah,
I'm asking, have you ever had one?
I've not had severe ones.
So I've had my back go out once before, and then I've had some other, you know, back problems. It can cause you, I mean, what it does to your entire body, it causes limps, it causes groans, it causes, you know, you to hunch over. I mean, it's amazing what it'll do to you.
Yeah, well, Adu definitely had a limp for a little bit coming off the court. So, it's a back injury for all that we know.
It's hard to move. It's hard to move sometimes when you have a back injury, just depending on the severity of it. Here, let me play this clip real quick. Calipari on his radio show last night, out at Sassy's here in Fayetteville, he did address Adu Thero's situation very briefly. This is what he had to say.
We're still, and to tell you, with Adu Thero, we're trying to figure out if he's going to be able to play or not. So without him, it's kind of like, if you remembered, we lost Boogie, had 2 days, and had to prepare for Georgia, if you remember. Well, now we have 2 days and have to prepare for Texas if he does not play.
John Calipari on live with Coach Cal last night, the video courtesy of Hogs Plus. He mentions the Boogie Flan situation, and it is similar in some respects. I think Flan probably, I think it was maybe a little bit more of a surprise because he had been playing, or he had played through the entire game before they played Georgia. This is a little bit different with Thero because I think they probably had an idea that next day that they might not have him for this Texas game.
Yeah, for sure. And I think with Boogie, I mean, going and watching, I keep on referencing the docuseries they're doing, but they talked to Boogie a little bit, and he didn't even really know how bad it was until after that Missouri game. He said that he basically had to tell the coaches, like, hey, I have to get this done. Like, it's impacting how I play. Like, and so it seemed to me like that was a situation where the player tried to play through it, and then the coach might not have been as aware of what the of how severe it was. But Adu, I mean, he realized whenever it happened, whatever happened, with about like 6 minutes left against Missouri, that something was wrong. And he waved and was like, I gotta go over here. I think the situation is different from a preparation standpoint in the fact that they're clicking right now.
You can tell when somebody has a back injury when you're watching them on TV, just because there's a stiffness to them. Who's the big guy at Texas who had the back injury when Arkansas played down there a couple, 3 weeks ago?
Was it Shedrick?
Yes. Yeah, Shedrick. So you could tell in that game. I mean, He couldn't jump. I mean, he couldn't. The fact that he was that was one of the most fascinating things to me from that game was the fact that he was able to stay out there and really impact the game as much as he did and for as long as he did with, I mean, the clear back pain that he was in. So we'll see if Thero can play through this. I don't think anybody would fault him if he can't. But this is a big, you know, this is a big story going into this game against Texas tomorrow night.
It's a big, big game too. It's one of those where it's like I mean, it's basically the teams are carbon copies of each other from a resume standpoint.
Exact same overall and exact same SEC record.
Yeah, and their net is Texas 38, Arkansas 39. I mean, it's basically one of those games that you could look back on if one of these teams doesn't make the tournament and probably say, had you won that game, you would have had what it is, what it took to get in. But it's one of those deals where the team has also just been clicking so much recently that taking a guy like Adu Thero out of the game, which, first of all, Calipari said Thero. We've been saying Thero. Does anybody even know at this point?
So when he went to Kentucky, this is probably one of those deals where you mentioned Calipari coached his dad.
Yeah.
When he went to Kentucky, all the pronunciation guides and everyone said it was Thero. When he came to Arkansas, everybody was told to say Thero.
Yeah, so, well, anyway, it's a hodgepodge right now of what you want to call him.
It's kind of like at Notre Dame, Joe Theismann was Joe Theismann until he got into the Heisman conversation, and then they intentionally began saying his name, Theismann, to try to...
I did not know that.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's no... you know, maybe they want Thero the hero, I don't know, but... Yeah, it's maybe people have mispronounced the family name for a long time, and they're just I don't know.
Either way, I like Thero. It's what I'm going to call him.
That's how it says in the Arkansas pronunciation guide, Thero. Yeah,
so that's what we're rolling with. But either way, I mean, it's one of those games where it's the team's been clicking. He's such an integral part of what you do. I think that the difference between this and losing Boogie is with Boogie, you have a guy like DJ Wagner that can take on that like point guard role and be, I mean, it's probably his natural position in the first place, and he was playing out of position with Adu Thero.
He looks so much more comfortable since Fland went out and he's taken over the point guard.
Yeah, I mean, he's still, and I could go on a rant about this. I feel like his shooting is the difference between Arkansas being good and taking it to a next level, like how they did at Kentucky whenever he got on in the second half. Then they're really scary. But with Thero, he has, you know, like with Boogie, there were kind of like ways to fill in that void and fix it. I feel like with Thero, he is such a unicorn of the team as far as like just the way that he's a 6'8 guy who's, I mean, he's athletic as it gets for his position and height, and he can get in the lane and kind of get his shot off whenever. I mean, sometimes that's a bad thing, but most of the time it ends up in either him going to the free throw line or finishing. It's just, I'll be interested if he doesn't play to see how Arkansas maybe attacks a little bit differently against Texas, how that'll change the offense particularly. I mean, Adu's a great defender too, so it alters the team. I think it is encouraging. You know, you think about right now, you know, Calipari said later on at the during his radio show last night, next man up, and it's kind of interesting because you're like, well, there aren't too many of those. Like, you're down to like pretty much seven guys in your rotation that you can have against Texas if Adu doesn't play. But I think you have to be encouraged that Jonas Adu has played better recently, and that changes things a lot.
Was the Texas game, was that the one where Thero was sick?
Yes.
There have been a couple this year. He was sick against Michigan. Yeah. I believe he was sick against Texas as well.
I think he was under the weather against Kentucky too. But, I mean, that makes sense. They were back-to-back with Texas. Right. So, he's a guy that, I don't know, he's just – such a crucial part of the team that you don't want him out for long, but you got to play it safe. I mean, if this is a guy who, you know, if you don't play him against Texas and you have him back for South Carolina, which we'll get to that later in the week, that's a game you got to win. Mm-hmm. Then, I mean, it's just, you got to do what you got to do, and hopefully the team has guys ready to step up.
He had 14 points in 22 minutes against Texas on February 5th. When they played down in Austin. All right, Joe Lenardi's updated bracket, bracketology, I should say, is out this morning, and really no change for Arkansas. They're still one of the last four in, although, you know, make of this what you want. When the last update was made last Friday, they were the second of the last four teams in. Now they are the third of the last four teams in, so someone has jumped them somewhere along the way. Texas is still one of the – you know, the what would you call that?
The teams that avoid Dayton, but they're still bubble.
Yeah, so yeah. Last four byes is how it says here on the Bracketology site. Basically, Texas is one of the last eight teams in as of right now. Arkansas is one of the last four in as of right now. So this is a huge game in terms of NCAA tournament, their postseason resume. If Arkansas has a 2-0 record against Texas and they avoid that loss at South Carolina on Saturday or another – crippling type loss down the stretch. I don't know that Vanderbilt would quite rise to the level of South Carolina, but losing to Vanderbilt, with the way Vanderbilt's played of late, that wouldn't be, it would be frowned upon.
Mm-hmm.
Tough to win in the SEC, but go back to Texas. If you have a 2-0 record against Texas and your resumes are almost similar, if it comes down to selection day and say you and Texas are the last two teams being discussed, well, you're going to get the upper hand over Texas, I would think.
I would think so, too. And here's the situation right now with the SEC in the bubble. You've got Texas, Arkansas, Georgia, Vanderbilt, really.
Oklahoma,
yep. Too, that are in that bunch of teams that are all vying to get in. There could be a lot of them get in. It could come down to maybe five teams? Three of them get nixed or whatever. You want to be a team against that group that has one of the better records against those. Arkansas's beaten Georgia. If they could sweep Texas, that's three of them. They still have Vanderbilt on the docket. They did lose to OU, which mm-hmm. OU is in a – their situation is so crazy because their non-conference was amazing. I mean, how they played to where they put themselves in a great position where it's hard to – like, whenever you step into SEC play and you suffer all these losses, it's not a good look. You don't feel good about the team. But then you look at their non-conference. I mean, they beat – the teams that they beat put them in such a good position entering conference play. I mean, you think about even Georgia. I think that in their non-conference, they beat St. John's, one of like St. John's four losses. These teams all played well in non-conference to where now, if you're splitting hairs at the end of who gets in, it comes down to how you did against each other, I think. And I think that's the position that Arkansas is in against Texas, where they have to look at this as a game where you really I'm not going to say it's a must win yet because there's still more games to play where you can make up for it, but it's nearing there in my head.
So Arkansas is 4-3 in their last seven. I still contend that it's a little bit of a disappointing stretch because I think that what really would have put it over the top is if they could have finished the game at College Station, or they could have finished the game at Auburn, or I'll even say finished the game in Fayetteville against Alabama. They had Alabama on the ropes there at the end and let them get away. So losing those games where you get that win, and I mean it is the win, especially Auburn or Alabama, that is the win on your resume at the end of the season if you can finish off one of those. So I still say it's a little bit of a disappointing stretch, but certainly you can see improvement from the team. Going back to Calipari last night on the radio show, I always like these radio shows because every now and then they'll peel back the curtain. You can kind of get a peek into what's really happening with the program. And this is a little bit of an extended clip, but I want to play this for you in its entirety. This is what he had to say, number one, about what he's told the team. He's going to read a piece of paper here at the start of this, and it's what he's told the team about facing adversity and how it makes them better. And then he transitions into talking about expectations, personal expectations. And I thought this was real insightful. This was from Calipari's radio show last night.
Let me tell you, I gave them this yesterday. I read it to them, and then I gave them a copy. And this is about the privilege of going through adversity. The privilege of going through adversity. But when you have these privileges to be able to go through adversity or setbacks and learn from that, I think those are lessons that we all benefit from. You develop a grit and a collective perseverance and fortitude. If you approach it the right way, which this group does, you can really grow. They can be incredible life experiences to be able to come through like we did. The players are the men in the arena, and no one outside that locker room really knows or understands what they go through. It's tough to explain it to those outside, but there is a toughness and a resilience that bonds you all together when others doubt and question you. And that's what I gave him yesterday. And I keep telling him, I'm stunned at your resilience. I mean, Today I talked a little bit about expectations. They limit you because you're thinking, I just got to reach this. Well, forget about expectations. Go for the gusto. Go for it all. Be your best version. They may not think that you. We're going to have some guys playing that gets they're getting an opportunity, and they're not worried about expectations. Who on this team is not worried about expectations, and you can tell, and he is reaching beyond what we all think he could do or what the expectations were? Who would you say? Yeah, I mean, come on. Billy Richmond. Don't foul, Billy. We want to keep you in the game. Quit grabbing people. You see in Carter, he was trying to live up to expectations early in the year. He was shaky. And then he just went to work and forgot about expectations. And now all of a sudden you're seeing a different Billy Richmond. I'm saying all this to you that how about Jonas is coming now. He's starting to come at the right time. He's running the court. You see him. Before you thought he was 38 years old. How old is this guy? Now you're seeing him bouncy, running up and down the court, doing stuff. But they have to go through things, folks. You know, I think, again, the adversity for all of us in our lives kind of defined us, right? Things happen. You get knocked down. And then all of a sudden you get up smiling. You lose it all, yet you're still giving to other people because they need it too. And all of a sudden, it kind of defines who you are. That's what's happened.
So good stuff there from John Calipari on his show last night. Your thoughts when you hear all of that?
Yeah, I mean, he's not wrong. I mean, this team has faced a lot of adversity between their injury situation, between starting 0-5 in league, and they're starting to show, I think, the last stretch. I mean, you talk about winning 4 of the last 7 and being, you know, it is disappointing to not pick off one of those top 10 teams, but I think Calipari's looking at it like if we are up on Auburn with 3 minutes left, in their place, this is the number one team in the nation. Are we really not one of the best? Are we really not a tournament team right now? I get it. You got to look at a whole body of work, and to pick your teams, you can't negate that they lost their first 5. But I think he likes that his team has faced that adversity, and they're at a position right now where if you're right now choosing who are the most deserving teams, that the best teams in the nation make the tournament. Arkansas, with how they've played since, honestly, that game at Kentucky, you can maybe go back to the Georgia game, but they are one of the better teams, and I think it's because they weathered that adversity. The win against Missouri was a huge win. Missouri's playing great right now. They beat Alabama like 110-90-something the game before playing Arkansas. So I put them in that category with those teams where they did pick off one of the really good ones. I think that they have a team that's faced adversity. They've made it through the other side. They're still facing adversity. And Calipari he's at the point where he's like, you know, how can I be mad at these guys? They're giving it their all.
It's always interesting about how the selection committee, like, because everybody's kind of got their own, I'm sure they're given a, hey, this is what you need to focus on. But it's still human opinion. And everybody's got their own criteria that they're going to look at come selection Sunday. And so, you know, the question is, are you talking about who are the 31 automatic bids?
Something.
So let's say there's 31 automatic, there's 37 at large. When it comes to the 37 at large, are you talking about the 37 at large, the best 37 at large teams for the entire season, or the 37 best at large teams right now? Because I think if you were going to say 37 best at large teams right now, there's no doubt Arkansas is in that conversation. If you're going to take the whole season into consideration, it might get a little bit dicey. What is your evaluation tool when it comes on Selection Sunday?
Yeah, and I think that right now Arkansas has metrics that are kind of backing, like being number 39 in the net. I think in KenPom they're like 36. They're in that conversation where if you're taking your top whatever that deserve at large, they've got the numbers and stuff that say they should be. It is just a matter of, can you erase from your memory what happened in January? I mean, and is a 16-11, 5-9 record in the SEC right now better than a 18-11, 10-7 or something in the ACC right now? You got to weigh which conference is better, and the bubble's pretty weak this year. That's what I think helps them too. That they've got a lot of meat on the bone as far as quad one wins goes compared to a lot of teams.
Yeah, that is an interesting point that, you know, how bad of an SEC record can you stomach putting a team in the NCAA tournament? I think about last year, Florida got into the baseball tournament with a 13-17 SEC record. And they're like, oh, well, you know, you should never do that. End up being the third best team in the nation, in terms of who was standing at the College World Series. One more clip from Calipari last night, and this is talking about Arkansas. And I hate this term, but I'm going to use it because it's popular this time of year. Controlling its own destiny, and about the Razorbacks still being able to determine on their own, not so much put it in the selection committee's hands. They can determine on their own whether or not they get into the NCAA tournament.
Can we still write the story that we want to write? Yeah, we can. Can you imagine what we've been – were you thinking that when we were 0-5 in this league? Were you thinking that after the Tennessee game? Now, that's why you just keep going. You keep showing up. Things are ridiculously – you just keep showing up every day. And I told them today – we're teaching and coaching even at shoot-arounds. And that's why our teams get better. That's why individuals get better as the year goes on. If you can remember, I said it, my team struggled early, but they just didn't struggle in a league this good. But they've all struggled early, and by the end of the year, if they're healthy, I've had some teams not healthy at the end of the year, it's hard. But if they're healthy and playing their best, that's when they go on runs.
John Calipari, courtesy of Hogs Plus. Last night, you can watch the entire Calipari radio show on hogsplus.com. You can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com, most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports with analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. You can also find our podcast on Apple and Spotify. Just search Whole Hog Sports. We've got a video version on YouTube, and we post the video on our Facebook and Twitter pages each weekday. Whole Hog Sports on any of those platforms. You can find our latest podcast. When we come back, some more basketball talk. I want to get into what Calipari's been saying the last few days about jersey retirements with Arkansas basketball, because this is something I've been talking about for a few years now. More on that in just a moment, but first a word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. Committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass. For all your glass market needs with the highest quality products, you can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. John Calipari, after Saturday's game against Missouri, of course, the 1990 Final Four team, members of the team were in attendance. Lee Mayberry wasn't able to be there because the team that he coaches over in Tulsa was playing. Oliver Miller, it's been fairly well documented that he's dealing with an illness, and he was unable to be in person as well. But still, many members of the 1990 Final Four team, including Todd Day, were there. And I think Todd Day's presence is really what caused Calipari to make these statements about wanting more jerseys retired or hung in the rafters at Bud Walton Arena. And there is a distinction. We'll get to that in just a second. First, he did talk about this on his radio show last night, and this is what he had to say about honoring Arkansas's great players more.
But Todd Day, again, here's the leading scorer in the history of the school. And we talked again. I told Hunter, and we've talked, you got to start retiring numbers. Instead of having two numbers, there should be 15 numbers up there. And I don't know what the criteria would be, but there are Ronnie Brewer Sr. There's guys that deserve to be in the rafters. And again, let me say this. You don't have to retire a number. Retire the jersey. You know, and have a ceremony, let them know. And, you know, Oliver Miller's really sick. Do me a favor. Say a prayer for him. Think of him visually and say a good prayer for him. He's battling it right now. But you think of the players that played here. And I said it. Like, I may be standing on Coach Sutton, Coach Richardson's shoulders. I'm having busts made that are going to be put in my office of those two. But these players are standing on the shoulders of the other players. And so, you know, I want my guys to know that I've coached here. Yeah, that's having your name. That's part of what you do. Go win a championship. They'll put your name in there. I'll make sure. I'll climb up there and do it.
Wouldn't that be a visual, John Calipari? Yeah. That might be worth the – you know, a lot of times whenever they retire jerseys, it's trying to get people in the building. It's a – you know, it's no, you're wearing a natural shirt. You know, they give out –
a vintage one.
You know, they give out – you know, they've got all these different promotions, and it's to get people into the ballpark. It's a similar thing when it comes to basketball. And you do these jersey retirements, it's a way to get people into your building. Bringing back the 1990 Final Four team on Saturday, mm-hmm. It's a way to get people into the building who may not, you know, it's like, how many ways can we entice people to come to the games when it is awfully easy to stay at home and just watch on television and more convenient and whatever the case may be? So it would be quite the enticement, I think, to say, here's going to be John Calipari walking up on the catwalk and dropping down the jersey.
The funny thing about it, too, that this visual is, I've been up there, and you have to climb. I mean, there's the ladder. You got to climb in the back.
Just, I would be terrified.
It'd be hilarious watching him. Whenever he said, I'll go up there and do it myself, I would audibly started laughing in the middle of the show. But yeah, no, it was really cool on Saturday, you know, talking about how you got, like, getting new ways to get people in the door to make a game special. That was really special Saturday. Like, I wasn't maybe not expecting it, you know, to that degree, just how unified it felt. Like, it felt like it made a lot of people in the program come back together.
Mm-hmm.
And it brought the new with the old in a way that Calipari, I think, is doing, honestly, a really good job with, as far as, like, he's really connecting old, great players to the mm-hmm. program now. I mean, he had them at the shoot-around. Coaching him up with some motivational speech. I mean, I think that he's doing a good job as best as he can to get these program greats now ingrained with his current team, and he just wants to see them honored. I mean, and especially whenever you think about what you mentioned about Oliver Miller. I mean, they mentioned it at the game, what he's battling, and the whole arena held up the O, and they took a picture and sent it whatever. I think that he had mentioned after the game how emotional their dinner was the night before. And I would just have to think, with some of the people who have passed on that team and with Oliver Miller, what he's battling,
mm-hmm.
it becomes very real to these people that, hey, you don't, there's not just a guaranteed time that you can be honored. You never know whenever it's somebody's, you know, time. And I think that that's what Calipari is trying to hit at, is that there's a lot of program greats that, I mean, the leading scorer doesn't have his number or anything retired yet, and it's just you need to honor them while you can, you know.
Yeah, and it's amazing that it took them 35 years to bring the 1990 Final Four team back for a reunion and a ceremony like this, because anybody who watched Arkansas basketball in that time will tell you that if it wasn't for Todd Day and Lee Mayberry and Oliver Miller and Ron Hury and Darrell Hawkins and that group laying a foundation for Nolan Richardson, they don't get Corliss Williamson. They don't get Scotty Thurman. They don't get the McDonald's All-Americans like a Darnell Robinson, who comes in and is a, you know, a role player on that team. And so, you know, good on Arkansas for bringing them back. There is a question about what has taken so long, and that's a good transition into talking about the jersey retirements. So, you know, I wrote about this, I think, the first time, Ethan, maybe 3 years ago, a column for our magazine about why are there not more jerseys that have been retired at Bud Walton Arena. You know, you can say what you want to about Jeff Long and his administration. I'll give him a lot of credit, though, for he put a lot of emphasis on getting banners hung in Bud Walton Arena. There was a stretch there where they had a banner for Nolan, they had a banner for they had a banner for Corliss Williamson, and his number had always kind of been unofficially retired, but then it was officially retired. And Sidney Moncrief, his number actually got retired in 1990 at a ceremony over at Barnhill. And then when they moved to Bud Walton, the jersey just disappeared. Nobody quite seems to know where it went. And so it took them many, many years, I think like 25 years before they got his jersey back into the rafters at Bud Walton Arena. They brought Eddie Sutton back for a banner ceremony. On the women's side, Delmonico DeHorny, Betty Fiskus, they had their jerseys retired on the women's side. But that, it just scratches the surface of people who I think are deserving of having this done. And I wrote this last year, so some of the numbers may be a little bit different. But I don't. When you're talking about 100 years plus of all these programs, I don't think the numbers are going to be real far off. As of last year, Arkansas had the 29th most wins of any program in college basketball. And all 28 programs with more wins began playing basketball before, and in a lot of cases, decades before, Arkansas. And so you look at Arkansas's basketball history. Is it the greatest? No. It's not Duke. It's not Kentucky. It's not North Carolina. It's not any of those teams. But there are a lot of programs that can't say they've won a national championship. There's a lot of programs that can't say they've been to six Final Fours. There's not a lot of programs that can say they've had two, now three, Hall of Fame coaches, coaching their program, that they had a Hall of Fame player, and I'm talking about a Naismith Hall of Famer, in Sidney Moncrief, who played for their program. So Arkansas has got a history that I think is worth celebrating a lot more than has been done. And so when it comes to banners, to me, Ethan, there are six names that I think should be in the rafters as quick as they can do it. I really hoped that they would do this during the 100-year celebration a year or two ago, the 100 years of Arkansas basketball. They didn't do it. They missed a boat there, I think. But, it begins with the other two triplets. Sidney Moncrief's in there. Ron Brewer, Marvin Delph, they ought to be there. Because those three players, talking about what the 90 team did for Nolan Richardson, that 77, 78, 79 group, that's what they did for Eddie Sutton. And they really built Arkansas basketball. It was on the backs of the triplets that Arkansas basketball was built. So Moncrief has been he's been honored. I think it's time to have Delph and Ron Brewer honored. And here's where I would stop and say, you don't retire the number. You just put the jersey in the rafters. You can't retire all these numbers because then you don't have enough numbers to go around. North Carolina, they've retired eight numbers. Okay, now there's only 15 roster spots available. They got plenty of numbers still to go around, but that's a lot of numbers to retire in basketball. And it has opened up here recently to where now it doesn't have to end in a five. You can wear, 36 if you want to wear 36 or 67 or whatever the number might be. But, Delph Brewer, that's where it begins. Next is what they call the 90s triplets. Todd Day, Lee Mayberry, and Oliver Miller. Bring them all back. Obviously, if Oliver's health is well enough to do so. But you bring all of them back, and you have a ceremony for all three of them. And then the sixth person is Scottie Thurman. Because of what he did and obviously the shot that he hit against Duke. But it wasn't just that. I mean, Scottie, what everybody forgets, because they focus on the Duke three-pointer, and rightfully so, that guy had like five or six game winners over a two-year span when Arkansas was a national championship team and a national runner-up.
He's iconic in the program.
Iconic, yeah. I mean, absolutely. And he's done things for the program even since he was a player for many, many years, whether it be as an assistant coach, a radio announcer, a support staff role. And so those are the six that I think you start with. And then I've got a criteria for more. Yeah.
I'm about to say, I even have a couple more on the cusp. Like, I'm sitting there. Joe Klein, I think, is on the cusp.
And he's on that next list.
And then I think you got to look at things, what they did at Arkansas and then beyond, too. I think Joe Johnson would be an excellent choice, too, at some point. And it's good you mentioned North Carolina. I went back and read because Bob Holt, we miss him every single day, but he wrote on this last year. And North Carolina, you talked about how they have eight jerseys retired. They have 53 banners, though, honoring players in its arena. And he talked to Joe Klein, who had called a game covering North Carolina, and he couldn't help but notice how cool it was. And I've gone to Fog Allen. I love how they do stuff there.
Have you been to Rupp?
I have been to Rupp once.
Yeah, so when you go in Rupp, and you probably notice this, when you go in Rupp, it's like your eyes just automatically look up, and all of the different banners. I think Kentucky has like 42 banners between. They've got players, they've got some coaches, they've got their longtime radio announcer, Kaywood Ledford, I think is his name. and his banner's up there. So, yeah, I mean, when you go in these arenas, and again, Arkansas is not Kentucky, but you go on Ole Miss, they got this wall with like 12 or 13 players. And you think about Ole Miss and the history of Ole Miss basketball and the history of Arkansas basketball, there's no comparison there.
And I'm the times that I've been to these arenas that do a really good job honoring, you know, great players, whenever you see one that you really know, like, I mean, that's why I say Joe Johnson's one that people are like, whoa, it adds a home court advantage, in my opinion, because teams walk in there and instantly know that they're in basketball ground. They're in a place that there has been some iconic basketball players and greats. I think that this is, yeah, just honor them. I mean, don't, like Calipari said, you don't have to retire the number, but retire the jersey. Put it up there. Let people where they can remember them.
So I think there's got to be a criteria that is established. And here's kind of what I've come up with Arkansas. Were you an All-American? Were you a conference player of the year? Or did you have a notable professional career after you left Arkansas? And here are some of the names that I would put in that group. Joe Klein, you mentioned him. Darryl Walker. Mm-hmm. Ronnie Brewer. Joe Johnson, who you mentioned. Martin Terry, great, great Razorback of the 1970s. Dean Tolson, another in the 70s, a great player. Mason Jones was a conference player of the year. Bobby Portis was a conference player of the year. Scott Hastings had a great pro career. Alvin Robertson falls into this category. He's had a number of legal issues that certainly would have to be considered when you think about whether or not you would put his jersey in the banner or his banner in the rafters. George Koch in the 1940s was really Arkansas's first great basketball player. I think he was their first All-American. Glenn Rose was an All-American, also was Arkansas's winningest coach until Nolan Richardson came along. So that's another name that I think you could put up there. And then I think you also you have to think about players who had an impact on the program who may not fall into this category, but maybe there's like a special achievement consideration.
Do we have
for them.
The same name in
mind? Pat Bradley.
Pat Bradley, that's what I was about to say.
I mean, Pat Bradley had the SEC's three-point record for almost 20 years until Henderson at Ole Miss came along and broke it. Do you think about Kareem Reed, all-time assist leader at Arkansas? U.S. Reed. I mean, think about U.S. Reed and what he did for Arkansas basketball and the NCAA tournament with the half-court shot that he hit against Louisville. So Corey Beck was a point guard on their national championship team, was a point guard on a national runner-up the next year. So those are the players that stand out to me. What is that? Close to 20?
Yeah, and you're not even scratching the surface of how many like North Carolina has up. And here's my thing. Whenever I completely get the whole issue with retiring numbers because it's not a sustainable model, but whenever it just comes to like
32 and 34, maybe 30. Those are the only numbers I think you should retire. 10, people will say you should retire 10 because of Todd Day, but think about 10. Ron Brewer wore 10. Todd Day wore 10. Ronnie Brewer wore 10.
Bobby Portis, Jalen Williams, Daniel Gafford.
There you go. Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's
reserve 10 for guys who you know are going to be really great players for you.
Yeah. And I think that, yeah, you're at a point where it's just find ways to honor. I mean, it was so cool what happened Saturday as far as like it felt like a unifying thing in the arena. It made a lot of people feel unified. You could see the emotion on Nolan. You could see the emotion on Todd Day, on Mike Anderson was there and he was emotional. You could see, I mean, our guy Matt Zimmerman, he got emotional. It means a lot to a lot of these people. And I think that just while you have people that are deserving of being honored, there's what wrong is there in honoring them in some way whenever you know that they fit a criteria like that where they deserve to be honored in an arena that they, quite frankly, helped build?
Contributors. I think there should be a contributors, portion to this conversation too. Mike Nail, one of the all-time great basketball radio people. In Mike Nail's heyday, there weren't very many others that were at his level. So I think that's one. John George, we've talked about this so many times, the longtime public address announcer, he's been doing this for like 40-something years now. Whenever there is a big game in Bud Walton Arena and John George gets going, I mean, it's like you get goosebumps. I just get goosebumps thinking about being in Bud Walton for a big game and, these are the, I mean, it's awesome when he's – and then Jim Robkin. Mm-hmm. Jim Robkin,
the band
director who really was, he and Eddie Sutton, I wrote a big story about this during the COVID shutdown that I loved writing about how Eddie Sutton came to Jim Robkin and said, I need you to give us the Arkansas version of the Cougar Brass of what they did at Houston, and certainly how the Hog Wild Band played such a factor in making Barnhill such a hard place to play.
And on the, I mean, just on the topic of people that deserve it, I mean, it's on the women's side.
I wanted to
Gary
get there.
Blair.
Gary Blair.
It's It's time.
No, I mean, absolutely.
Like, I don't know what else.
Gary Blair's 78, 79 years old. But let's get this done.
Yeah.
So he can be here, and he's got family that lives here in Fayetteville still. Let's get this done where people can enjoy this, you know, instead of doing it when it's too late.
Yeah, I think he's got a grandson, either a women's manager or on the men's. I think he might be on the men's team as a manager. I mean, it'd be a really cool deal to honor him.
Christy Smith.
Yeah.
Another on the women's side.
There's just players that built these programs that it's like, and I get it. There's probably a lot behind the scenes that they're doing to try and make things happen. But if there's not, there should be.
So, I mean, we've given you like an entire season of bringing back great players to have their banners raised in Bud Walton Arena. There really is no reason why this shouldn't have already happened in Fayetteville. So hopefully, you know, this administration will take heed of
if
not what we're saying, but what John Calipari is saying.
If there's a mouthpiece that you want right now saying what you should do, I mean, John Calipari is he's not going to stop saying it.
And remember, he'll walk up to the catwalk and drop the banner down for you.
Yeah, I know. That was so funny. He says, if we win a championship, I'm putting my name up here if I have to do it myself. So, anyway.
All right, when we come back, we're going to talk some Razorback baseball, some Razorback softball. They're in town this weekend, but first, another word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. Arkansas baseball is going to be in action today, 3 o'clock first pitch against Grambling State over at Baumwalker Stadium. Arkansas 6-1. They're up to fourth in the coaches' poll. That was updated yesterday, first coaches' poll update of the regular season. It'll update weekly now as the season goes along. Grambling State comes in 4-3, but you look at their record, and it's probably a little bit misleading. They played basically all SWAC schools, you know. They're playing these SWAC schools in non-conference games here early in the season, teams like Southern and Alabama A&M and Jackson State, and they're having some success in these games, although you look at Grambling, Ethan, they're averaging 9.86 runs per game. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
But their ERA is 9.15, so it's kind of,
do it.
Yeah. So I fully expect that this game this afternoon will have a run rule. I think that this is a get right game for Arkansas offensively. It might take a couple three innings. Bubba and I talked about this yesterday. You know, Grambling, they always run somebody out there on a Tuesday who's throwing like a 61 mile an hour breaking ball. And it takes a little while standing in the box against that to really get your bearings. So, you know, we've seen some times where Arkansas has played Grambling, and it's taken them, you know, a couple three innings to get going. They've never lost to Grambling. Came close a couple of years ago in this Tuesday game after getting back from Arlington. Arkansas had to rally and win that one 9-7. I think they were down 5 or 6 runs in the game. And then last year they just hammered them 21-1, and it was a 7-inning run rule over at Baum. So that's kind of the type of game I'm expecting this afternoon. I don't know that you should ever go to a baseball park expecting a game to play out a certain way, because a lot of times you'll end up getting your heart broken. And we'll see how Arkansas constructs its lineup, too, this afternoon. You know, I think there's a lot of players who haven't gotten to play a whole lot this year who maybe this is an opportunity to give them some playing time and see what they're able to do, an opportunity to sit some players and give them a little bit of rest before the weekend series against Charlotte. And Ben Bibee is going to start for Arkansas on the mound this afternoon. I suspect that we'll probably see anywhere from about 4 to 7 pitchers take the mound for the Razorbacks.
Yeah, these games are always interesting to me because it's just, you're just trying to take things to learn from it, but it's, you know, it is a midweek game. Like, it is what it is. You should beat this team bad. If you don't, it's not necessarily a red flag, in my opinion. It's just, because weird things can happen midweek. But yeah, I would expect a run rule too. It's just there's only so much you can glean from these. You want to see your bats. I think that's the most important thing, mm-hmm. is how are you hitting. But like as far as pitching is concerned, it's just honestly a good chance to see what some guys have.
If you can't hit Grambling, and again, this is not a normal pitching staff that you're facing. Bubba called their pitcher, he throws a Bugs Bunny fastball. It's the one that kind of starts up high and then it just kind of drops down. And, so it is a different type of pitching staff that you're facing. But if you can't hit them, that to me is concerning for whenever you're going to face, the really good pitching staffs later on in the year. So we'll see how this goes. But Arkansas and Grambling this afternoon, 3:00. Over at Baumwalker Stadium. Yesterday, Arkansas shortstop Vahevo Aloy was named SEC Player of the Week. We talked about this yesterday. Big week for him down in Arlington. A couple of opposite field home runs. Had a big game Sunday, 4-for-4 with a walk. Had 3 runs scored, a couple of RBI in that win against Michigan. Really strong week for him, even going back to the Washington State game last Monday, which qualifies in the Player of the Week stats and conversation. So Vahevo Aloy is Arkansas's first player to get Player of the Week this season. This game today begins a 10-game homestand for Arkansas. They're going to be here until SEC play begins. And so I mentioned this yesterday. I think that this is the time of the year where you see a lot of growth from your team over these next couple 3 weeks. And it'll be interesting to see how much growth we see from Arkansas, from what we saw in Arlington, say to what we see in mid-March when they start SEC play.
Yeah, and that's all you can ask for, I think, this time of year. Because anybody who's watched college baseball or, frankly, any college sport over the years knows that, how you are playing at the beginning of the year isn't necessarily indicative of how you will be playing at the end, but it is a chance for you to grow and show signs of what you could become. I think that's the most important thing, is showing what you ideally want to be striving for at the end. You don't want to regress.
Two more quick notes on baseball today. It's always kind of fun when you get early in the year and the stat lines are just totally inflated.
Oh my goodness.
The ERAs of the two starting pitchers today for Arkansas, Ben Bibee, because he gave up 2 runs in one inning. He's got he gave up 1 run in one inning. He's got a 9.0 ERA, and he's got a 2.0 whip. Carlos Peguero, the right-hander for Grambling, a 54 ERA and a 6.0 whip.
That'll get it done.
Yeah.
For a loss.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, that was just one inning for him, though.
Yeah, it's a great point you make about these early season stats that haven't had time to average out or anything. Mm-hmm. It's so funny seeing what some of these, like the averages that players have. What's kind of your number of games threshold that you are like, okay, these stats I'm now calling, like I'm predicting things. For me, I feel like once I get around to 10 to 15 games under the belt.
I go further than that. I would probably say after about 3 weeks into the SEC season, because then you've played enough quality competition that I think it kind of balances out some of that early season stuff that you see either on the weekend or in the midweek.
Yeah, I guess it just depends on your schedule probably too. If you're a top team that's been loaded up playing a lot of elite other top teams, then give it some more credit. But it is just funny because you're trying to strike that balance of not overreacting but also being like, holy, like for me, we'll get to softball, I think, is Bree Ellis, her stats are insane right now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you've done it against good teams too. So it's just, you don't want to overreact, but you also got to give credit whenever a player's just on a tear.
Logan Forsythe, the former Razorback, is going to be on the call this afternoon on the SEC Network Plus broadcast along with Brett Dolan. Logan going to sit in for Troy Eklund today, and then on the radio, Phil Elson and Bubba Carpenter on the Razorback Sports Network. I was looking at Washington State's schedule. Washington State came in here to Fayetteville week one. They're 0-8.
I must say they still got 0.
0-8. I was for sure. I don't think Washington State's a great team, but I think that they have got some potential. And, maybe they'll get into the Mountain West and they'll be fine this year. But I thought they would go to Corpus Christi after they left Fayetteville, and I thought that they would win some. They end up losing to UCLA, a close game, lost to Michigan State, lost a couple of games to Corpus Christi. 0-8, I think they got 4 games where they've lost by 1 to 3 runs, and then they've got 4 games that have been more lopsided. I'm really surprised by that. They're going to play Iowa 4 games down in Texas this upcoming week. I don't know if they're going back to Pullman. You have to wonder about how much the travel does affect them because, I mean, Pullman to anywhere, that's a long trip.
Oh, yeah.
Pullman to Corpus Christi, I mean, what are we talking about? Flight time there, probably 5 hours.
Yeah, and have they stayed on the
road? No, that's the thing. They came to Fayetteville, and then they left Fayetteville on Tuesday, and they flew back to Pullman, and then they left Pullman, I think, like 36 hours later and flew to Corpus Christi. So the travel can...
Corpus Christi is the one place from here that I think that, like, the Naturals, shout out to me wearing their shirt, I think that they fly to that game. I mean, it's just so out of the way.
Yeah.
But, like, you think about it, if that's a flight from here, holy cow, what's it from... I mean, Pullman is not close to anything, anywhere that they're playing right now. But I would have thought...
You could have just stopped at anything.
I would have thought...
It's not close to anything.
I would have at least thought of, like, you know, if they're this close, like, it's not going to be a quick flight, but if you're already, it's going to be a really long flight going back and forth from Fayetteville there, then there to Corpus Christi. I guess, you know, I just asked the question, what is school anymore? Like, I don't know how school works anymore.
Tutors.
People do stuff all online, yeah. If they have to be there in person, I have no clue how school works right now because I was a student in the middle of whenever COVID changed everything, and I didn't know what school was because I was half the time sitting in front of a computer, the other half in a classroom. It's just, you know, I'd be curious to know, like, what the whole dynamic is for a lot of these teams. And it's interesting, we're bringing up this travel stuff. If Eric Musselman went on a rant about the Big Ten travel right now,
oh, yeah.
And it's affecting a lot of teams over there on the West Coast.
Do you think he would be ranting about it if he was winning, though?
No.
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 Travel's great.
Yeah.
Give us all the East Coast games.
I did it in the NBA.
Yeah, exactly. softball this week. Iowa and Illinois coming to Bogle Park, also Missouri State. The Razorbacks are going to play Iowa twice, Illinois twice, Missouri State once as part of the Woo Pig Classic. What are they, like this will give them, what, about 20 games now into the season? Is that right?
Yeah, they'll have 20. It's exactly 20. They had a chance to go 20-0 non-conference, but then lost to UCLA.
So, the first two games of this, and it's both of these games are going to be on Friday, are not going to be streamed on SEC Network Plus. We've run into this a few times here where you have so much stuff going on campus that there literally is not enough production capability to handle it all. So baseball is going to take precedence on Friday. There's going to be a baseball game against Charlotte. There's a gymnastics meet at Bud Walton Arena Friday night, I think against Alabama, which is a huge meet. And so there's not going to be any softball streamed on Friday. The final three games of the weekend for softball are going to be streamed on SEC Network Plus. Tell us about Illinois, Iowa, Missouri State, and Arkansas, and what you expect this weekend.
Yeah, I haven't looked a whole lot into Iowa, Illinois. I just know that they're not considered in that top tier of the Big Ten in softball. Missouri State, I think they played in the fall and beat them pretty handily. So I'm expecting this is a weekend that, you know, whenever you play big-name teams like that, if you lose a game, it's not the end of the world, but it's a slate of teams that Arkansas could very easily go in and go 5-0. The way that they've been playing, I just think that if they handle their business how they should, this should be an undefeated weekend. Quite frankly, they have the pitching right now. They have the hitting. They had a bad game against UCLA. I think it was kind of a mixture of their first time playing like a top five team this year, and UCLA's been through the gauntlet of, like, who haven't they played? So I think that they might have been a little bit more ready for that moment. So I think that that's probably a big lesson learned for Arkansas against them. But I'd expect them to have a good showing this weekend. Home opener, it's supposed to be great weather. I'm excited for it. I mean, it's supposed to be beautiful all weekend, I think. So I'll be interested to see what they do. It'll be they've played a lot of Big Ten teams now. Like, after they've played Rutgers, it's weird to say, they played UCLA, Big Ten. Then they'll have Iowa and Illinois. So they'll have played a lot of Big Ten teams pretty early.
Print the T-shirts if they win it. Big Ten champions.
Well, I think UCLA would have a word.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah,
maybe Big Ten co-champions.
They
I
will say this past weekend, they had a disappointing end losing like that. But they, up until that point, they couldn't handle business any better. Like, they were just beating teams like a drum. Like, I mean, they run-ruled Rutgers and Cal State Fullerton, which... Cal State Fullerton's good. They run-ruled them 10-0 in five innings. Rutgers is all right. And then they beat Baylor, which was a preseason number 16, and they're right on the cusp of being ranked. They beat them 8-0 in five innings. So they were handling business up until that last game. They're really good this year. This is about as good. I've covered them. This is your number 4 in some capacity covering them. This is as good as I've felt about them at this point of the season since I've covered them. But there's still a whole lot of season left.
14-1. Of course, SEC softball, it's like SEC everything else. It's cutthroat, right?
It's probably the worst of them, honestly, with OU and Texas as far as adding them. I mean,
when you say the worst, the toughest.
The toughest.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, and their schedule did them no favors. You're like, they play the top teams from last year's SEC, too. They have Florida on the road, Tennessee on the road, and Texas A&M on the road. That is a gauntlet. I mean, that's three top 10 teams on the road, and then you also have OU coming to town. They've got a tough, tough, tough schedule. So it's good for them that they're handling business how they have in non-conference.
A lot going on for the Razorbacks this weekend. SEC Indoor Track and Field Championships are Thursday, Friday, Saturday down in College Station. The women trying to make it 11 years in a row. They've won an indoor title. The men trying to win their sixth in a row. Both teams, I think, are going to be favored to win the SEC championship. We'll see how it goes, though. Arkansas in College Station this weekend for the SEC Indoor Championships. There are two women's basketball games to close out the season against the other two worst teams in the SEC.
It's actually pretty intriguing. Like, as far as it couldn't get more intriguing for their final week that I've been using this website for men's and women's multiple conferences. You can like choose results for the end of the year and calculate how their conference tournament will look. And the women, they realistically could win both games this week. Like, it's not,
just so people know, Missouri coming to Fayetteville on Thursday, and then Arkansas goes to College Station on Sunday.
They beat A&M by 21 last time they played them, and that's a totally different team now that they lost their best player. Missouri's playing really well right now. They're 2-11.
Arkansas beat A&M without their second and third leading scorers, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so.
So Arkansas, well, at least for part of the game without the third leading, without the second for the whole game. So Arkansas should feel confident going to A&M. Like, they got, if they play well, they could win. And then Missouri, that's a ghost record.
What's the win streak against Missouri for Arkansas? 12?
Like 11 or 12, yeah. Maybe 13. I've lost track.
It's been a very one-sided.
Yeah. In a program for Arkansas that it's hard to find a lot of consistency in recent history, that is one thing they are very consistent in. They've beaten Missouri. But Missouri, that they have a 2-11 record that is a ghost record. They are playing so well right now. They just almost beat Ole Miss on Sunday. They almost beat Kentucky the game before that. They were close with Texas, the number one team. Like, they're playing really well. So that's a tough game. But if Arkansas could find a way to win both of those, they could be as high as a 12 seed in the SEC tournament, which is crazy.
How bad has the season been for women's basketball?
For Arkansas?
Yeah.
Or,
I'm talking about for the Razorbacks.
Oh, I mean, it's 20 losses are the most in program history.
I mean, but it's not just the losses. I mean, it's the scores. I'm just scrolling through here. And I mean, you just started SEC play. There's 34, 34, 30, 32, 41 to Vanderbilt, 20 to Kentucky, 30 to Florida, 23, 39. And then they've lost their last two games by 40.
Yeah, there's never been more of a, I feel like if you are not in that upper tier right now, like SEC men's basketball, South Carolina can go give Auburn a game because they just can. On the women's side, you can draw a line a lot of times and you're like, this is going to be ugly. And it's what's happened to them. It is hard to watch when they're getting beat by 40. And it's crazy too, because they lost the last two games by 40. South Carolina, they had it within 13 midway through the third quarter, which is, you know, for playing South Carolina, actually pretty good. Like, I'd expect a ranked team to do that. Oklahoma, they cut it to 7, like 4 minutes into the third quarter. And then it balloons to 40 by the end. It's just crazy how for this team, once things start going bad, it just snowballs and snowballs. So
the neighbor's conversation at the end of the year is going to be very fascinating to me. He's got a buyout of over $1 million. Obviously, whenever you make a coaching change, if that's what they decide to do, it's more than just the head coach. You've got your assistants that you have to take care of in some cases. You've got the coach that you are hiring away from somewhere and a contract to potentially have to break there. And so, but when you're talking about that, in normal times, okay, you're talking about this with the backdrop of the house settlement and trying to slash your expenses by so much. This is fascinating about what they're going to have to navigate this with women's basketball, because you can't have these types of seasons. And, you know, I mean, to neighbor's credit, he's never had a season like this. They've had seasons that have been some disappointments, But they've been seasons where they get to the WNIT or another, you know, second-rate postseason tournament, and they've had some years where they've gotten to the NCAA tournament too, and it was disappointing for them. They've never had a season like this where they've just been totally uncompetitive. And so, you know, the conversation has to be, number one, is this an outlier? Do you, you know, how, and you know, how much is the buyout and all of this stuff? You know, are there things that are going on behind the scenes that we don't know about? What's their NIL situation like compared to the teams that they're trying to compete with? My guess is probably not very good.
It's things I've heard, like as far as Miriam Dowda, how she's doing at South Carolina compared to Arkansas.
No comparison.
Yeah. I mean, it's just it's.
Well, you got Sam Spencer who went from Arkansas to Tennessee. You've got the
Hoffenbarger went to Maryland. That one she's close to home, but I'm sure it's a better situation there.
Help me with her name. Scott.
Talia Scott went to Auburn.
You got Jersey Wolfenbarger who went to LSU. I would venture to say that in all five of those situations, they are probably doing better for themselves, if not much better for themselves financially than they were doing at Arkansas.
Yeah, I'm not willing to. Yeah, I'm not willing to say that's why they transfer, but I would be willing to say that that's
a factor.
It's a factor, and it's. I mean, nobody's going to complain about if your NIL situation's better. It just seems like I'll be curious whenever revenue sharing kicks in, which I don't even know how this is all going to work with what gets distributed to women's basketball.
I don't think they know yet.
If it helps them out with getting more talent in the door, transfer portal, and it's just...
But it's not going to help you against the rest of the SEC because they're going to be distributing the same type of revenue.
Exactly. It's just...
Everybody gets to decide how they want to divvy it up. Like, how much are we going to get football? How much are we going to get basketball, baseball, whatever? So the schools get to decide, you know, where the money is going to be allocated, but my guess is that it's going to be very comparable from one SEC school to the next.
And you can't tell me that at a school like South Carolina or Iowa is in that conversation. I think UConn is too, where women's basketball is a revenue-generating sport that they aren't going to be willing
Baylor.
To... that they won't be willing to, whenever they're distribute some additional there that a program like Arkansas might
No different than Arkansas probably would distribute more to track and field than most other programs would distribute to track and field, because there is an expectation level and a level of, you know, excellence when it comes to the type of athletes that they bring in the door for that sport.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder, like, if you're not one of those sports on campus that already has, you know, your established place that you need to remain competitive and at the top, like, what is the recipe? How do you get up to the top? Are you going to have to just have some sort of coach that you know, coaches you? Like, it's just an act of coaching, or are you identifying these diamond in the rough players that you were? It's just, it's crazy. I don't know how you go about it.
Going back to women's basketball, this is fascinating to me because I don't feel like I have my finger on the pulse of what's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't either.
I think a lot of times I do. You know, like, you can feel which way the wind's blowing when it comes to, okay, it's time to make a coaching change. I can't get a feel for what's going to happen.
It's crazy because this is a season that I think. Yeah, given just the whole circumstances, everything else surrounding college sports outside of it, it changes the dynamics a whole lot. And, you know, there's some schools like, you know, we brought up Missouri, their women's coach, they've been bad the past few years, and I think her buyout ran out this year. So it's, I mean, if they don't make a coaching change, I'd be shocked. It's whenever you get in a situation with a school where they have a buyout still, mm-hmm. how much are programs willing to pay money that they don't have to.
And keep in mind, a buyout is can be paid out over time. It's over the life of whatever's left on the contract. So if, you know, Mike Nabors, for instance, has a million plus on his buyout, it's not that he's getting, you know, it's not like you've got $1 million on the book next year. It might be 500,000, might be, you know, 300 something thousand, depending on, I don't know if it's 2 or 3 years left on the contract. But
what still, changes is what you brought
still,
up.
Still, it
staff.
Is an amount of money,
yeah.
A significant amount of money in a time when you're trying to cut expenses as much as you can.
And with what you brought up about, I mean, it's not just one player, or one coach. It's a lot of the staff, and you're bringing in a new staff. That's an expense. So it is an expensive thing.
I mean, like a football change. I mean, you're talking about, depending on how much the buyout is for the coach, you're looking in the, you know, $20, $30, $40 million range.
And how much does that impact the status of women's basketball when you know with football that there's an expectation this year.
There's
that,
a possibility at the end of the season. That's exactly right.
It might be the best time and the best time he could have picked if you're going to be losing by 30.
It's an interesting time when it comes to college sports. we appreciate you being with us today. We'll be back with another podcast tomorrow. Hope we'll see you on our website this afternoon, wholehogsports.com. I'll be out at Bomb Walker Stadium. Christina Long will be there too. We'll have a lot of coverage from this Arkansas Grambling State game. Also, we'll have a preview this afternoon of Arkansas-Texas basketball, which will be tomorrow. We'll have another podcast for you tomorrow. Aaron Fitt from D1Baseball.com will join us. He was at Globe Life Field over the weekend. He'll give us his evaluations of the Razorback baseball team. Again, we appreciate you being with us. Hope we see you again tomorrow or on our website. Have a great day, everyone.